Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jeff McNeil leads off. First pitch, swung on, line drive, base hit toward the right field line. Rounding third, Acuna up with it is Hassel. Throw to the plate, offline, too late, and one pitch is all it took. The game is over, and the Mets have come from behind to beat the Nationals here in game one of this series.
Charlie Slows last night on the call. Tough loss for the Nats. They had a 4-2 lead with two outs and nobody on in the eighth when the Mets roared back to tie it up and then eventually win it in 10. Good morning, everybody. Two guests on the show today, 11 a.m. We'll talk to our good buddy Steve Sands at Oakmont. This U.S. Open setting up to be one of the more difficult course U.S. Opens ever. Heard somebody on the Golf Channel last night say that if it firms up and you don't get any rain, 10 over could be the winning score. Steve Sands will join us at 11. And then Joe House from The Ringer will be on with us at 12 to talk some NBA playoffs. Good morning. You know what? I there was nothing on last night, Max. And so I watched that last 30 minutes or so of the Nats-Mets game. It's another sign, by the way, just big picture, that the Nationals are so much better than they were last year, so much more of a competitive team than they were last year. I think after their 1-7 start, I think they are 28-29 since, something like that. 13-10, I think, in their last 23. Nobody hotter in the National League than the Mets coming into the game last night. And Washington had New York dead to right with four outs left in the game. Another solid pitching performance from Mackenzie Gore. Six innings complete, two earned runs on five hits. He struck out six. In his last four starts, just three total earned runs allowed. Last night's star was Juan Soto, who has played well, much better recently after Met fans had decided, for the moment anyway, just a few weeks ago, that he was terrible and that it was a horrible acquisition. I mean, you had, you know, Vinny and Hoboken and Liam in the Bronx, you know, typically getting massively carried away with how bad Juan Soto was. But Soto has raised his batting average. I was looking this up before the show, from a season low 224 on May 28th to now 248 in the last 11 games. He's got 14 hits, four home runs. He's drawn 13 walks, raising his on-base percentage from 352 to 386 in the last 11 games. So Juan Soto starting to play more like Juan Soto. But 5-4 was the final in 10. C.J. Abrams, by the way, in the game, 3-for-4 with a homer and two doubles. It's been really fun watching Mackenzie Gore pitch. You know, he's potentially headed towards an all-star appearance. I thought there was a chance last night, and I was flipping around, wasn't totally dialed in this moment. I did watch the last 30 or so minutes as the game went from sort of the ninth inning into extra innings. But there probably was a chance for him to come out in the seventh. He retired the heart of the Mets batting order in the sixth in just 11 pitches. He had just 89 pitches for the game, but Davey decided to go to the bullpen in the seventh.
I got a fun Nat stat for you, Kevin. They are 27-33 as underdogs this season. That is the most games won as the betting underdog. So if you want to get a little bit of value, it might be a good idea to look at the Nats every night on the money line.
I would imagine 27-33 is an underdog. First of all, that's 60 games. How many have they played so far? They've been an underdog in virtually all of their games. They've played 66 games. So I would imagine, I guess, against Colorado, they were a favorite maybe. Yeah, I mean 27-33, depending on how big of an underdog. That's that you're plus money.
It's good value.
Yeah, really, you're up big money. Because I would imagine in many of those cases, you were getting a lot back. But you know they were right there. You know they were four outs away, 4-2, two outs, bottom of the eighth, and then the Mets were back to tie it and eventually win it. Much more entertaining team to watch because of what they're capable offensively. And look, it's fun right now to watch Mackenzie Gore pitch. He is a real high-level, you know, Major League Baseball starter. There is no doubt about that. The Nats still have two more up in Queens against New York. And then they got a road trip coming up where it's Dodgers, Padres, Angels at the end of this month. That may sort of determine whether or not they can get to the All-Star break, you know, in the position they're in now, which is they are actually in third place in the National League East. They are two games better than the Braves, who have been, I think they've lost 15 of 19. They got back to 500, the Braves did, after their terrible start. Now they're 10 games below 500. But the Mets right now have the best record in the National League. They are surging. And the second best record in all of baseball behind the Tigers. But the Mets looking really good. All right, I got this from Jim that I wanted to read. Dan Quinn, remember, we carried his press conference yesterday on the show after minicamp day number one. And guess who Jim wants to talk about? Yes, Terry McLaurin. Jim writes, Sheehan, do you think Dan Quinn referring to the negotiations with Terry as contentious means that we're in for a long haul? I mentioned this on the show, and I think Jim heard it. There was a quote yesterday from Quinn. That I thought was interesting. It was the second question about Terry, about how he's learned to deal with situations like Terry McLaurin's current situation over the years as a head coach. And he said, quote, I think it's why we all have people that can help on that side. And he's referring to the business side. He said, I can have the relationship as the coach and the ball player and the man. And so, yeah, just keep a cool head about it and keep communication up, which Terry and I certainly do. I think the main thing, expect the expected. Sometimes the business and football can get contentious and difficult, but it never has to be with the people that are inside the locker room. And so I've learned through the years that it is easy advice to follow. You know, what Quinn was essentially setting up for everybody is good cop, bad cop. He's the good cop. He's the friend. He's the coach. He's not involved in the negotiations. That's Adam Peters and his team, you know, and those involved in contract negotiation for the organization. And he wants that separated. That's how he's learned to deal with these situations. Keeps the communication line open. Hey, Terry, I'm not the guy. You know, that's, you know, another side of the building. That's who you and your agent are dealing with on that front. I'm right here. The players are right here. Same relationship as always. But to Jim's point, and I pointed this out because it really, when he said it this way and we were carrying it live on the show, using the word contentious and then also the word difficult, I do think that he was speaking specifically to this negotiation. Not that the reporting last week about Terry's frustration over this didn't indicate that maybe it was contentious and difficult, but you kind of got that from the head coach yesterday. He didn't need to say that sometimes the business and football can get contentious and difficult, but I think he was referring specifically to this negotiation. How does it play out? You know, are we in for the long haul? I don't know. I honestly don't know. You know, I'd love to it's easy to sit here and kind of speculate, and it's easy to even come up with some common sense answers based on what we know. I think the most common sense answer to why they are where they are is Terry's age and what Terry wants relative to where they believe he is as a receiver in the league. And then on the flip side of that is, yeah, you may not see me as a top five receiver, certainly not entering my early 30s, but you need me. We're trying to win the whole thing in 2025, and I'm easily your best playmaker on offense after the quarterback. And so, yeah, I think when this first started to be a conversation, meaning OTAs had started, Terry's not there, it was really not a big deal. I'm not, by the way, on the verge of saying it's a big deal now either. I'm not. I think the report last week, missing minicamp, the contentious and difficult from Dan Quinn, thinking about this not as Terry was a 26-year-old receiver 3 years ago, but 29 entering his age 30 season. He'll turn 30, I believe, on September 15th, so after the opener, but actually after the first two games, right? Because it's September 7th against the Giants and then September 11th against the Packers. Yeah, this might last longer than maybe we thought 2 weeks ago, but I am still where I've been all along. I'd be surprised if they don't come to an agreement. And for Terry, yes, he's got some leverage because they really do need him. This is not, you know, a team that was 6-11 hoping to improve to 9-8 and, you know, make a wild card run. This is a team that was 60 minutes away from a Super Bowl that believes that they can get back to that point and maybe a step further this year. But they're not going to feel good about doing that without him at age 29, 30. You know, they may have some reservations on what he might be at 32, 33 for some of this contract, but they're in window number one, as we've talked about since the season ended. This is Jaden Daniels' window number one. Jaden on a rookie contract deal and trying to make the most out of it, trying to leverage that fact and try to win a Super Bowl now. There will be future windows for this quarterback. You know, we are 2 years away from perhaps Jaden Daniels participating in a mandatory minicamp as the highest paid player in the history of the game. Right now, the odds are, because Jaden was the only quarterback out of the class last year to do what he did, and he's the only quarterback in NFL history to really do what he did in his rookie year, the odds are that sometime early in 2027, Jaden is going to sign the largest contract in the history of the game. Now, that'll be exceeded, you know, a year later or 2 years later, but quarterback, that's when he becomes available. Of all of the guys selected last year, he's the most likely to get that. They don't have to do it in 2027. They could just pick up the fifth-year option and have him play that rookie contract deal in year four and then try to get him paid before the fifth-year option year. That's possible, too. But, you know, when you have something that special, it's always better to recognize it and do something about it before the player gets close to, if I just played one more season here, I might be a free agent. Of course, they would never let him get to free agency. But yeah, this is going to be interesting to follow. I know it's June. I know we're grasping for things. A lot of you were grasping for things off of videos that came out of minicamp. I'm sorry, you're not going to get me to get super pumped up and excited about Jakori Kroski Merritt because he looked good against, you know, some blocking dummies and his cutback ability. I like the tape on him. Seventh rounder, please. Out of all the players that they drafted, obviously Connerly Jr. has a chance to make an immediate impact. Trey Amos will definitely have the chance to make an immediate impact. Jalen Lane's going to probably be on the field at the very least as a punt returner. I'm really kind of interested to watch what happens, and it's only his rookie year, with Kane Medrano, their sixth-round pick out of UCLA. That guy, as Scott McLuhan would say, that guy's a football player. Now, where does he fit? Is he a linebacker? Is he a safety? Is there any room for him to make the team? How good of a special teams player can he be as a rookie? We'll see. Thank you, Jim, for the email. And yes, I talked about this immediately after Quinn's presser yesterday before the first day. I thought it was interesting that he mentioned contentious and difficult as well. You know, he could have been just talking about, in general, these things can become contentious and difficult. But I thought that there was more to it than that. We'll see. It's only June 11th. Training camp doesn't open until, what, the end of July. Plenty of time. Terry missed all of mandatory minicamp in 2022. It's certainly not a big deal. It was a bigger deal then when you think about it, because they had a new quarterback in Carson Wentz. He is pretty in tune, you know, after, you know, not 17 games, but 20 football games in season number one with his quarterback, Jaden Daniels. All right, let's get to a what do you got? So college basketball fans, major rule changes have been voted on and approved for the upcoming 2025-2026 season. It starts with college coaches can now challenge calls. They'll have the ability to have one challenge. They'll need to have a timeout to challenge. If they're successful, they'll be allowed one additional review for the rest of the game, just one. If they're unsuccessful, they'll lose that remaining timeout. Now, the plays that they will be able to challenge are out of bounds calls, you know, who touched it last, basket interference, goaltending calls, or whether a secondary defender was in the restricted area arc. You know, so if they call, you know, a block suggesting that the player was inside the arc, but the, you know, replay shows that he had both feet outside of it, that can be challenged as well. Also, they didn't pass this yet, but it's still in conversation. College basketball, there is positive momentum right now for a change in the way the game is laid out from two halves to four quarters. Now, it hasn't passed yet, but there are some that believe that college basketball could move to a four-quarter game. The women's game is a four-quarter game at 10 minutes per. I have said this for so long. There are so many sports that we watch that I think can just be too long. College football games are too long, even though they did away with, other than in the final 2 minutes of the half in the game, the stopping the clock on every single first down, which did take some minutes off of the game. But we have all sat there on Saturday afternoons in the game that starts at 3:30, all of a sudden it's like 8 o'clock and it's still going on. You're like, what? I mean, this is 4+ hours. And I've always felt like college football was the game specifically that could be shortened up a little bit. Although, the interesting thing about college football is there's really not a lot of complaining about the length of the games. And college football, unlike pro football, turns into a full weekend more often than not. It is arriving Thursday or Friday. It is partying all day Friday, you know, partying Friday night into Saturday morning, the game, and then staying Saturday night, waking up, breakfast, and then getting back on the road to head back to wherever you live. And so an extra, you know, 35 minutes on what the NFL game sort of lasts. The NFL game's perfect. It's super tidy at an average of like 3 hours and 2 minutes. But college basketball's college football's been long, but I've always felt like college basketball is too short. Literally, you can sit down to watch a college basketball game And many times it's over in less than 2 hours. 20-minute halves, it just moves super quickly. If you get a game that's officiated very loosely, without a lot of whistles, without a lot of calls, it is not unusual for, you know, a game that starts at 1 o'clock to be over at 2:50 p.m. I mean, the tournament games are interesting because they tend to let teams play a little bit more when we get to the NCAA tournament. Not every game is officiated that way. But when you get one of those games where they're like, we're going to let them play, it's just over so quickly. If somehow you arrived late to the game, you know, you're there sometimes for just an hour and 20 minutes, an hour and 25 minutes, and it's over. Now, the move to four quarters isn't going to change anything. They're not going to go to 12-minute quarters and turn it into a 48-minute game. It would still be a 40-minute game, so it's not going to shorten the overall product or lengthen the overall product. But just interesting that they are considering it. Honestly, I don't care when it comes to the 20-minute halves. I wouldn't mind them making it 22-minute halves, make it a 44-minute game, so we get just more product in college basketball. I feel like out of all of the sports I watch, you know, at and consume at a high level, it's the least amount of product that you get for the money or for the investment in time. You know, the NFL's perfect. I think the NBA's, you know, the NBA ends up being longer than college basketball because it's 48 minutes versus 40. And you have more timeouts and they get used a lot more often, it seems like. And that can be, you know, more of like a 2.5 hour game. It's never less than 2 hours. I think baseball's now, you know, some people would argue it's too short. I love baseball now, how much they've sped up the game. I think that was incredibly necessary. I don't know. The NFL seems to have it perfect, though. I mean, you sit down at 1, and you're pretty sure that when you get to 2:50, you know, when you get to, it's for a 1 o'clock game, when you get to 3:50, 3:45, 3:50, you're at, like, that 2-minute warning, and those last 2 minutes can take up to 15 minutes, and you're right at 3 hours, you know? And then if it's a really close game and there are more timeouts used, you know, sometimes that game will last to, 4:10. 4:15, but still in plenty of time to get you ready for the 4:25 kickoffs. Sometimes the 4:05s go quickly, and they're underway. Man, the NFL has figured everything out over the years. By the way, I can't wait for NFL to get underway. Counting down the days. All right, there was some NFL news from around the league. We'll get to that. As mentioned, two guests on the show today for you golf fans. This is going to be incredible to watch this weekend. The U.S. Open at Oakmont, where the rough is high, the greens are running at 14 plus, and they're talking about, you know, something over par winning the tournament, and some have suggested it could be double digits over par to win the U.S. Open. Steve Sands will join us at 11. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So there was some NFL news yesterday. I mean, it wasn't big news. The big news, really, more than anything else that you read about and you probably saw, was Aaron Rodgers reporting to Pittsburgh minicamp, saying that the number one reason he's there is Mike Tomlin. And he thinks that being in Pittsburgh with that organization is, quote, good for his soul, closed quote. He also disclosed, or he was asked, and he answered, that he was married recently. Nobody followed up and asked him to whom. Do we know who Aaron Rodgers married?
I have no idea. I'm kind of shocked that any of the Pittsburgh reporters, like, didn't follow up. But at the same time, if they did follow up, I'm willing to bet that there was a really good chance Aaron Rodgers would have said, that's my business, not yours.
Yeah, but, you know, there's a way to ask that question.
Absolutely.
In a very, you know, you just say, look, if this is too personal, understood, but who did you marry?
Yeah.
But he revealed that he was wearing a wedding ring. I mean, the fact that he had his wedding band on, I bet you, knowing as a football fan, Aaron Rodgers, he was hoping somebody would ask. And he was asked, you know, if what he was wearing on his ring, what he was wearing on his ring finger, and he said, it's a wedding ring. But nobody asked the follow-up. Which is nuts. How many times has Aaron Rodgers been married? Was he married? He was married to Olivia Munn, right?
Were they married or were they dating? I'm not 100% sure because it was Olivia
Woodley,
Munn.
I thought he was dating. I thought he married Olivia Munn.
Did he?
Danica Patrick he never married, right?
I thought, did he marry Shailene Woodley? I really don't, because I know they were together.
I don't think he married Shailene Woodley. I thought he married Olivia Munn. It's going to say it in his Wikipedia.
It
right?
should. You'd think, right?
Well, you find that out. Look it up and see who he's been married to.
We'll be
the other piece of NFL news, and it was not like a big headline or anything, but I noticed it, just like I noticed Nick Chubb last week signing with the Houston Texans. J.K. Dobbins signed with the Denver Broncos yesterday. The deal, according to ESPN, was 1 year for $2.75 million. With another $5 million in incentives, but it's exactly what we had talked about as it relates to Dobbins and Chubb in this offseason, is you could get them essentially for next to nothing. You know, a one-year, very low-money deal with, you know, it pounded and built up with incentives. I'm a bit surprised that Washington didn't sniff around on Chubb or Dobbins. Actually, let me rephrase. I'm not surprised. I don't really have a feel for what they were thinking about running back. I would have liked to have seen them, you know, sniff around those guys to see whether or not medically it made sense to offer Dobbins or Chubb a one-year $2.75 million deal with incentives. Because let's face it, none of that is more likely than not guaranteed. So you could have brought them in and you could have released them at the end of training camp, if it turns out that they weren't any better than what you had, or they weren't, you know, healthy, I guess you are certainly taking the risk that they get hurt before you release them or decide to cut them. But what are you really on the hook for? $2.75 million? J.K. Dobbins, at his best, is better than anything they have on their roster right now that we know of. Okay? I'm not discounting Kroski Merritt. I'm just saying what I've been saying, which is, in the last 10 years, 33 running backs have been taken in the seventh round, and one out of the 33 has been a major contributor, and that's Isaiah Pacheco in Kansas City. That's it. That's the list. One out of 33. So the odds are stacked, based on history, against Kroski Merritt becoming a significant contributor. I would have looked at Dobbins. I would have looked at Chubb. Maybe they did. And maybe the fit was better for both of these players in these other locations. I've not seen any reporting that Washington was involved in any of these guys. But anyway, that leads me to this. Do you have the Aaron Rodgers who he married yet?
According to the Wikipedia, he was in a relationship with Olivia Munn, never got married.
Okay,
that
never
was
married.
14 to 17, and then Danica Patrick in 2018 to 2020. Then he started dating Shailene Woodley, and they got engaged. And then in February of 22, they called off their engagement. So that's Aaron Rodgers dating
history. So he's never been married?
Never.
Okay.
According to the Wikipedia.
I guess we'll find out at some point who he actually married this time. You know, speaking of Olivia Munn, I don't think I've mentioned this.
Big fan.
On the show. I binge-watched over the weekend the John Hamm show on Apple TV, Your Friends and Neighbors. It is really good. High recommendation on Your Friends and Neighbors. It's 9 episodes. Each episode is 40 minutes, roughly 45 minutes. It is, I think I would describe it as sort of a comedy drama, maybe a dark comedy drama. And Olivia Munn is in it. Amanda Peet's in it. John Hamm is incredible in this. He's incredible in everything. He plays a hedge fund guy who is super wealthy, living in a very super wealthy, uber wealthy suburb of New York, probably modeled after like Greenwich, Connecticut, or a place like that. And he gets fired from his job, and he turns his life towards becoming a thief and robbing his very rich neighbors and friends. It's very well done. The only thing, and I was telling Tommy this yesterday on my podcast, the only thing that I didn't love, I didn't think the acting was that great from some of the people, but he is phenomenal. Olivia Munn's great. Did you know that she was sick? She's battled cancer. I didn't know that.
Really?
Until, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's... she was diagnosed with breast cancer, I think, last year, and she's had some tough go with that. But she was excellent in this show. Amanda Peet, you know, I'm not a massive fan of, but she was good. But, man, John Hamm in this show, it's worth it just to watch him. And this sets up for a season two at the end. But if you're looking for a quick binge over a weekend, 9 episodes at 45 minutes each, you'll watch episode 1 and you won't be able to turn it off from that moment on. And I literally got through it on Saturday and Sunday. Very early, very late at night and very early in the morning.
That's the best cosign. That's the best cosign you can give a show, though.
What?
Is being waking up at the crack of dawn.
Yeah.
Is like, I want to watch the show.
100%. That's what happened. Like, I woke up and I was like, I got to get to the next episode. Got to get to the next episode. John Hamm's phenomenal. And I never watched Mad Men. That's a big hole in the television resume. Never watched Mad Men. I don't know why I haven't watched it, because it would be right up my alley, I think. He was outstanding in this show. Totally worth the watch. It's called Your Friends and Neighbors, and it's on Apple TV. All right, so I looked at something before the show this morning because I wanted to know, just, we're at that stage now where all of the, you know, preseason previews and picks are starting to come out. You know, typically you get them in early June so people can sort of sit with them, and then you'll get like a lot of them that'll come right before the season begins. And I found 10 random NFL NFC East previews, and all 10 had Philadelphia winning the division. That surprised the hell out of me. Like, I thought that going into this summer, when we started to get into, you know, preview season, that Washington would be picked to win a division here and there. And maybe they still will be as we go through the rest of the summer and more of these come out. But I found literally 10. Some of them were really obscure, you know, but all 10 had Philadelphia winning the division. This is a division that has not had a repeat winner since 2004, as we've discussed many times over the years. I think it's because of just how impressive Philadelphia was on their way to winning the Super Bowl, but specifically the last impression that we have of Philadelphia. And by the way, the last impression we have of Philadelphia versus Washington. Now, I will tell you, in all 10, Washington was picked to finish second. And then the Cowboys were picked to finish third. Actually, there was a couple where the Cowboys and Giants were jumbled up, with the Cowboys last, the Giants third. I know I've said this before in recent years, and it has nothing to do with anything about the way I feel about the Giants. I just think the Giants roster has been much better in recent years than their results. Their results have been have been essentially driven by quarterback play and injuries. And I don't know how much of an upgrade Russell Wilson is. I don't know if Jackson Dart ends up emerging as a starter, although everything you read out in New York is that they are very pleased with Russell Wilson, not only the player, but the leader. How about that? But this is a team that has a really good offensive line. They've got a budding and emerging super high-level star at wide receiver in Malik Nabers. They have, I think, a very underrated from his rookie season, but you know, eyes to keep on at the beginning of the season, which starts here on September 7th. But Tyrone Tracy had a very quiet but very productive rookie season at running back. And then their defense, man, is loaded. Loaded. You got Dexter Lawrence. You got Brian Burns. They added, obviously, Abdul Carter. They've got guys like Okereke and McFadden. They are good on defense. I don't know what that means. I was looking at their schedule because I was like, and again, what do you know about a schedule? But if they teams they face to start the season are the teams we believe them to be, they start at Washington, at Dallas, and then come home for their home opener against the Chiefs, and then in week four play home against the Chargers. That is brutal. You know, it's funny, the two of the worst teams, at least in over-under counts heading into the year, have two of the most brutal starts you would ever think teams could have. Cleveland has the lowest over-under heading into the season at 4.5 wins. They open with Cincinnati at home, go to Baltimore in week two, host the Packers in week three, and then go to Detroit in week four. Oh, and then it's Vikings, Steelers, Dolphins.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, even if you were looking for what's that team that has the best chance to go from last to first, because we see it all the time, you know, in the NFL, you know, somebody comes out of nowhere. You look at the Giants and you look at the Browns and you're like, even if they are improved, and I'm not suggesting the Browns are improved. I do think the Giants are improved. But look at the brutal starts potentially. I mean, they may not be able to climb out of what the NFL schedule makers created for them to begin with. But back to sort of the NFC East previews. We may get people picking Washington as the summer goes along and towards the beginning of the season. But I'm surprised. I think Washington deserves some consideration for winning the division. They will have, I think, the best offense in the division. Philadelphia certainly is going to be able to run the football like they did last year, but I think overall Washington will have the most dynamic, the most explosive, the most effective, the most efficient, best quarterbacked, maybe the best schemed up offense in the division. But there's no doubt that Washington's flaw, which people believe to be a flaw heading into next season, is what they are as a full team, because defensively, not that good. And Philadelphia loaded defensively, even with the players they lost. Milt Williams, Josh Sweat, etc. They just always seem to plug and move on with, you know, comparable, if not better, younger players. The Cowboys have a chance to be better, I guess. You know, I just don't trust. I wouldn't trust Dallas as far as I can throw them. Who knows what kind of coach Schottenheimer is going to be. Who knows whether or not Dak Prescott can actually stay healthy? Who knows whether or not they can actually run the football? They added Miles Sanders and Javonte Williams. You know, they added Pickens, obviously, to go with CD Lamb. You know, it's funny because the three teams in the division that are not Washington should be good on defense. Philly, for sure. I think the Giants and Dallas, you know, they're going to get Parsons signed. He showed up at minicamp even without his extension. You're going to get Parsons, you know, along with, you know, remember, they had a lot of injuries defensively last year. They lost Ron Bland for a big part of the season coming off that year in which he had all those pick sixes in 2023. You got Trayvon Diggs, who was hurt last year. You know, they've got, they brought back Dante Fowler Jr. That's where he landed, if you weren't sure. Dante Fowler Jr. back there. They drafted the kid from Boston College as a Raku. That'll be interesting to watch. And, you know, you had some players last year that got hurt that were promising, et cetera. But I think Washington should be seriously considered to be a potential division winner. I mean, the history of the division plays into it. Not really. I mean, I think that is coincidence as much as anything else. You might say, well, these teams know each other so well. The rivalries are so intense. It's just so hard to repeat as an NFC East champion. Philadelphia is still entering the 2025 season. In terms of overall roster, they've got the best roster in the NFL. That is close to fact. Don't you think, Max? I mean, am I missing somebody? Philadelphia, top to bottom, has the best roster in the NFL.
In terms of top to bottom, I do think you're right. Like
entering 2025.
Yeah, there's, I guess you can't, I'm trying to think of like teams I would make a case for, and it's very tough, like, because you can poke holes pretty much in any one that I'd bring up, but Eagles is just, their O-line's dominant. They're deep at both wide receiver one and two. I mean, you have the best running back in the league. Like, and that defense, that secondary is just second to none. So, yeah, roster building from that standpoint, yeah, Eagles are 1-1.
Yeah. You know, the thing about the way they laid it out is we're not going to know really anything about what they look like against each other until very late in the season. And let's just hope, you know, when you get to December 20th, their first meeting in the, you know, third to last weekend of the season, that it's for something. You know, that's going to be the key. Washington's just got to stay right there, you know, with Philly. You never know how these seasons play out. I was watching something yesterday morning on NFL Network, I think. Where's Peter Schrager now? Is he moved to ESPN?
Yeah, he's an ESPN talent now.
So he was on ESPN, and he was talking about Pittsburgh and what they might be like with Aaron Rodgers. And he said, look, you can pencil in Houston for the NFC South and the 4 seed. So if Pittsburgh can just make it as a 5 seed, they can go to Houston in round 1 and win that game. And win a playoff game, I'm like, you're talking about first round wild card matchups on June 10th? You out of your mind? Have you watched the NFL at any point? You have no idea what's going to happen. Although, you know, it certainly seems like a Houston AFC South 4 seed hosting a game, which has happened, what, the last 2 years, right? They hosted Cleveland 2 years ago, the Chargers last year. You know, I could certainly see the AFC South winner being Houston and being the 4 seed, but he's already got Pittsburgh as a chance to go to Houston and win. By the way, I'll remind everybody, Houston as a 4 seed in the AFC postseason the last 2 years hasn't lost. They beat Cleveland badly the year that Joe Flacco kind of led the Browns late in the season to a playoff berth. And then they came from behind to beat the Chargers last year. So It's kind of an interesting just thought. Like right now, give me the playoff team that you feel the most confident about as far as where they'll land seeding wise. It's actually, although it's a ridiculous thing to sort of to describe, I get where he was coming from, but to put Pittsburgh there as a team that could then go and win, a bit premature. But I guess you could say, yeah, the AFC South winner more likely than not is going to be the 4 seed. You know, more likely than not. And by the way, the NFC South winner, more likely than not, is going to be the 4 seed. Although last year they weren't, right? Last year they were the 3 seed. Washington played Tampa Bay in a 3-6 matchup. And then the Rams were the 4 seed and played the Vikings, who were the 5. I would say that the one thing you could feel good about penciling in, even though it's the NFL and things change, because, you know, watch Indianapolis or somebody like that win the division, is Houston as the 4 seed with C.J. Stroud having a good season and them finishing 10-7, but being far less than, you know, Kansas City, Baltimore, and AFC East Buffalo. Man, the AFC is so predictable. It seems like it, right? Although this could be the year that Kansas City gets supplanted. Denver's better. The Chargers, you know, won 11 games last year. 12 games, 11 games. And the Raiders have a quarterback in Geno Smith.
They have a head coach in Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
They have Ashton Jeanty. Raiders might be sneaky.
Is this the year the Chiefs don't win? I think they've won 8 or 9 straight AFC West titles.
Sounds right.
Is this the year they get supplanted?
This is a good question. It could be. If Bo Nix takes that step, that Broncos defense is still as dominant as it was last year, could see it.
Broncos, remember, played the Chiefs really well last year. They
did.
Missed that short field goal at Arrowhead.
Yep. And Mahomes celebrated like they won the Super Bowl. It was crazy.
You know, as much as the Chiefs appeared to have been vulnerable last year and not as good as they've been, let's not forget, they won 15 games.
People forget.
They were 15-2.
People do forget.
And they did get to the Super Bowl. You know, they beat, you know, the Bills in the AFC title game to get to the Super Bowl. Oh, the other thing, too, is to not forget that the final game of the season was a throwaway. They didn't play anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So they were 15-1. Going into that game. Nah, the Chiefs win the AFC West. The Bills win the AFC East. The Texans probably win the AFC South, although you never know in the AFC South. And the AFC North, I don't know, Cincinnati, if they get Hendrickson signed, they cut Pratt. Can't believe they cut Pratt the other day. Man, they are cheap. Shamar Stewart's not showing up for anything.
Yeah, over
because they want to change his rookie deal.
Right. It's very weird. Somebody said the Bengals are more interested in winning arguments than they are in winning playoff games, and it's kind of right.
Yeah, but you know, like all of those years where we said, "Look, there's only two ways to overcome our situation: he sells the team, which eventually he did, or you end up somehow, you know, landing on a quarterback that is a game changer." And that's what the Bengals have. The Bengals have one of the top five quarterbacks in the game. And by the way, maybe the best receiver in the game. And so they're able to mask all of the dysfunction behind it. And, you know, for those that say, look, if you have an elite quarterback, you know, it doesn't guarantee playoffs. No, it doesn't guarantee playoffs. It guarantees sustained contention for the playoffs. And every year Joe Burrow's been healthy, they've either been in the playoffs or they've been in the hunt as they were last year. They didn't, you know, they weren't a bad team. They were 9-8. They just had a terrible defense. But that's how you mask the dysfunction organizationally, is to end up with Joe Burrow at quarterback. If Washington, during all those 24 years, had landed on a Joe Burrow type, even if it were by accident, that could have kept them much more competitive over the years, despite the dysfunction. Although, because the owner was so horrible, there was always the thought that he would get in the middle of a really good quarterback and coach relationship and mess it up anyway. As he did with, you know, not necessarily a guy that was going to become a transcendent quarterback in RG3, but obviously they screwed up seven ways to Sunday, the Kirk Cousins situation. Again, not that Kirk Cousins was Joe Burrow, but he was a quarterback capable of keeping them competitive, as he did when he was the starter. All right, Steve Sands coming up at 11 a.m. We'll talk U.S. Open golf. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
All right, yesterday it was reported by, I believe, Tom Pelissero and Ian Rappaport that J.K. Dobbins is signing a one-year deal with the Denver Broncos worth up to $5.25 million. The New York Knicks continue their head coaching search with very little luck. Their requests to interview Houston head coach Ime Udoka and Dallas Mavericks head coach Jason Kidd were denied. Team USA Soccer played Switzerland in their final tune-up game for the Gold Cup and got worked by a score of 4-0. This extends their losing streak versus European teams to 8 games, including a home losing streak of 4 games. The Washington Nationals, they fall to the Mets. Jeff McNeil hits the walk-off hit, and the Nats leave 7 runners on base with ample opportunities to close. They will continue their series tonight at Citi Field. Charlie and Dave have you covered with Nats on Deck at 6:40. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.